How do we bring relative certainty to an uncertain area? And that's through formula transfers. The potential benefit is it allows a transferor to define the dollar value of hard-to-value assets passing to taxable transferees. And there's various types of formulas. There's a long discussion of this in the big outline. Defined value clauses based on values is finally determined for federal, estate, and gift tax purposes. That's Wandry, Christensen, Petter. That's a relatively simple formula that we'll talk through in a minute. Defined value clauses. In the Fifth Circuit, where we all are, McCord and Hendricks are approved. McCord, we went up to the Fifth Circuit on that case. Hendricks, we didn't have to go to the Fifth Circuit because the tax court in Hendricks decided they didn't want to get reversed again. So they basically blessed that formula based on the McCord Fifth Circuit analysis. Price adjustment clauses. King, I sell an interest in an LLC to my daughter, Abby. She pays me $10 million, I hope. And we have a purchase price adjustment clause that says if it's ever finally determined for federal gift tax purposes that the value of this interest is greater or less than $10 million, we're going to adjust the purchase price. And that's the King clause. That's the Tenth Circuit. What's clear is reversion clauses don't work. And what is a reversion clause? Instead of that example I just gave you, I give to my daughter, Abby, stock, 10 shares of stock in XYZ Corporation. And then we agree that if it's ever determined that this results in gift tax, I get shares back so that no gift tax would be owed. That's a reversion clause because it undoes a final transaction. Now, that's different from a Wandry clause that we'll talk about in a minute. It's very nuanced, but it's an important difference. But reversion clauses don't work. The Proctor case from 1944 says they don't work. And the tax court has reaffirmed its view of Proctor in Petter and Christensen. So reversion clauses don't work. Now, the formula language matters. It really does. And we'll see why in a minute, but I'm going to walk you through the various types of formulas. Wandry. I hereby transfer to, I'm going to use Abby again. I hereby transfer to Abby that number of shares of ABC Company with a fair market value as finally determined for federal gift tax purposes equal to be $10 or $10 million. And the way Wandry worked, there's more language than this in there. There's adjustment features, but this is the operative formula language. This is what's really transferred under state law. And if the value of the shares is determined to be worth more than $10 million or less than $10 million, if it's worth more than $10 million, there's an allocation back to me under this formula of shares. Now, why you might say, well, why isn't that a Proctor clause? Because it's not a reversion. What I transferred under state law was that number of shares of the company having a fair market value is finally determined for federal gift tax purposes equal to $10 million. That's what I transferred under state law. We had to allocate shares, so we allocated it based on the appraisal. And then we have a provision that allows for reallocation. Whereas in Proctor, I'm transferring a specific number of shares. I'm transferring 10 shares, but I get shares back if it's ever determined that gift tax is owed. Slight nuance. The government hates that nuance, but it's real. I think Wandry is a great clause. We have it's a tax court memo decision, and the IRS non-acquiesced in it, but the Fifth Circuit in the recent Nelson case cited it, and I don't think the Fifth Circuit cites it unless they believe it works. But you know that's one of the arguments we'll make to the government. But we have had a lot of success settling Wandry cases at the audit level, more success settling them at the appeals level. Because agents are across the board on whether they're going to respect Wandry because of the non-acquiescence. Appeals, I don't recall a case unless it was a busted up clause, and busted up clauses do exist, where they weren't going to give us credit they weren't going to respect the formula. Now, Petter, a little different. Petter is, I hereby transfer specific number of shares. Sounds a little like Proctor, but it's not. A specific number of shares of the company to taxable transferee. In Petter, it was intentionally defective grantor trust created for the benefit of Mrs. Petter's two children. And to charity. So, Idgett and charity. But it could be a Q-tip, it could be a grat. To be allocated between those two as follows. The number of shares with a fair market value is finally determined for federal gift tax purposes equal to specific dollar amount goes to the taxable transferees, the IGIT. And then everything else goes to charity or to, and charity is what it was in Petter. But you could use a Q-tip, you could use a grat. And the tax court said that clause works in Petter, and the Ninth Circuit said that clause works. And the Fifth Circuit cited it in the recent Nelson case. The King Clause, and Petter, I like a lot, and we'll talk about why I like it a lot in just a minute. King Clause, I hereby sell a specific number of shares of the company in exchange for a promissory note with a principal amount of specific dollar amount, which the parties believe to be equal to the fair market value. Effectively, it's what we talked about earlier. There is an if it's ever determined that the value of those shares is greater or less than the appraised amount that we relied on, the consideration is adjusted. And the Tenth Circuit said in King that clause works. And we've used that a lot. And we've settled a lot of cases with that clause. I really like it when you're, for example, selling assets out of a Q-tip because it provides us with two arguments. One is the formula clause argument, you know, the King formula. And second, it's a nuanced argument, but...